Welcome to the Tech Gaming Podcast, World 7-6. I'm your host, editor and cook, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me, as always, is my sergeant-at-arms, Sean Nola Kirkland. Say hi, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
And also with me is Adam Tidegear Malecki.
I made it again.
Yes, yes. You escaped from the barrel roll. The guys let you loose.
Yeah.
All right. Or is it wing damage?
Yeah, well, wing damage is the side, barrel rolls the podcast.
Wow. We need a catchy name for our podcast.
I've been actually reading your articles lately. I even commented on one of them.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they're cool guys.
Yeah, very, very cool. Noticeably missing this evening is Samarage, who is following the advice of Dalsim, and she's perfecting her yoga fire and her yoga noogie tonight. Did Dalsim actually say yoga noogie?
Is that what he was saying? I don't think so.
So that was just kind of made up? That was
yoga indigestion?
Urban legend?
I'm pretty sure it's not yoga noogie, but I could be wrong. It was the 90s. The 90s were a crazy time for racism in video games.
Yoga Abba Gabba?
It was yoga noogie. So anyway, let's briefly talk about E3, because our last recording got eaten by the gods there.
Yeah, I actually want to talk about this. So people who go way back know that the way the Tech Gaming Podcast started was at E3. We decided we should do something to cover it, so we recorded something on Adam's iPhone and then just turned that into a show. So we tried doing that. We tried doing that again this year from the press room. We had a pretty decent sized podcast, but I was the least curmudgeon-y of the group, which can tell you how the quality of that podcast was.
Oh, dear.
And B, about 20 minutes in, the people behind the little temporary wall were taking out the trash. So there's this big noise of trash getting taken out, and then the microphone never really recovered from that. So then we all sounded really far away. So,
And about 20 minutes in, I was just kind of idly tapping the ground as I did. Sean gave me the look of death. Ooh. It was like, it put fear in my heart. So anyway, briefly, let's talk about, one of the questions I kind of had for you guys, about the show overall is the press conferences from the big kind of three hardware manufacturers. Any, I guess even the publishers, why do they have to be 90 minutes? I mean, is it me, or do you think they could be like 60-minute showcases, instead of that hour and a half duration spectacle?
What we kind of forget is we call them press conferences, and they call them, what do they call them? Something
give
without
us
the
money?
No, they call it something without
sleep
the
enhancements.
Word, without the word press in it, because they're not press conferences, they're for the press.
Global and media event or something.
It's something like that. But the idea is it's not just for the press. It's also for investors. And it takes 90 minutes to get both of those viewpoints across.
Does it?
It does, kind of. Because they show a bunch of trailers and they show a bunch of gameplay. And then in between they talk about their numbers. And I think.
But do you really need 2 minutes of people dancing to get the gist of Dance Central 2? Do you really need that?
Yeah, because Ellen's going to show that on our show.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Sean on this. They the spectacle and all that. It's just how these things work for some reason, and because one company does it, the other ones have to do it too.
I would go in the other direction and say if I were a big company, I would try and make those events longer, and then have a smaller showing at the show. Because, I mean, just from my experience doing conferences for other things, I know those booth spaces have to be expensive. And when you see how much they're spending on those, I mean, like Bethesda blows easily a game budget every year on their booth. So you could argue that's a game they're not making every year so that they can have that booth at E3.
So,
yeah, I have to wonder how important it really is for these companies to be at E3, especially when there's like such a huge like influx of media on every site. And I wonder, like, you know, especially if you're a smaller company, like, do you really even get noticed?
Well, I think, and this is what Capcom is doing more and more of. You notice Capcom didn't have a lot of news at the show, but they're going to have that trip to, I guess it was Hawaii last year. Who knows where it'll be this year.
Afghanistan.
Yeah, where they'll get a bunch of the
Captivate.
Big. Yeah, they'll get a bunch of the big news sites to go to this.
Yeah,
and then they
people
will
they know the, that are already fans or whatever.
Yeah, and then they will own the news for that week, and that's a lot more cost effective and a lot.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
and it gets right. them a lot more exposure, and I think that's kind of the future of these events. I think E3 will eventually become another Comic-Con. It'll be where people show games that are about to come out so that people can come buy a ticket and play games. But I think we're reaching the end of days as far as E3 being this big event that press has to go to get all their information.
I mean, it makes sense. You have a captive audience, so why not stretch out for 2 hours? But I just found myself in each and every one about an hour in kind of feeling bored. And I noticed other people were kind of looking around or on their phones, were doing those, you know, type of things. And maybe from a business sense, it does make sense. But it just, I don't know, felt too long for me.
Yeah, but I mean, but look at it this way.
Especially Microsoft.
Microsoft was just taking out what they showed, that was a poorly designed show, especially after last year when they had, like, Cirque du Soleil. People, I think, went expecting to be entertained, and when they weren't, I think it was a huge letdown.
And then it really puzzles me. What were some of the guys? Phil Spencer, the Don, what's his name, Matrick, the rock star, what's his name, Kudo. Those guys are some of the stiffest, dullest presenters I think I've ever heard in my life. And and for Microsoft to have all that money and not really hire a presentation coach to kind of ramp them up, I just don't get it. You know?
Their whole presentation
just cried out for transitions. It was like, here's this. Okay. And then, people would walk off.
I think that's definitely a case of, like, just anyone being afraid to tell them, you know, you might need to enhance your speaking skills a little bit.
Is true. They did walk a lot of executives out there.
Yeah, and video games are supposed to be fun. We don't want to hear about, you know, Phil Spencer, you know, coming out and giving us a boring monotone about why we should love Kinect.
Yeah, but I think to address your question or your statement earlier about, you know, a lot of people are sitting there on their phones and, you know, doing other stuff, being bored during the presentation. I think part of the thing you have to understand from A, their standpoint, and B, Microsoft's standpoint or Sony's standpoint or Nintendo's standpoint is that games journalism has become so segmented and specific. You know, so many people out there have websites just for motion gaming or websites just for RPGs, and they still go to those press conferences, and they go and they wait for the one piece of information that's important for their site, and then they hop on their laptops, type up their press release, and send it out.
You're right.
But, I mean, yeah.
I ran into a couple of the Microsoft MVPs at the Sony show, and I just think the Microsoft MVP program is just indoctrination. It's to try, you know, this cult operation.
What is that?
To get people. You're a site, and if you're a site and you evangelize the Microsoft kind of product, you become an MVP, which grants you access to certain shows and things. Like a number of people who weren't able, like us, to go to the Microsoft presentation because they were an MVP. And, you know, signed on some contract that they would only report on Microsoft products.
You know
they
were allowed what? That seems like something that was, because one of the guys Sage and I went out and had drinks with was actually only there because I guess they sent out a thing over Xbox, a message over Xbox Live at some point to active players saying the first 100 people that respond to this get tickets to the show and tickets to the press conference. And that's 100 seats that didn't go to press or investors or anything like that. And I mean, that was a big deal this year that it was really hard to get into Microsoft, and it seems like it's a lot easier to get into the Microsoft press conference as just a dude if you try hard enough than it is as press.
Right. Well, okay, yeah, definitely. But one of the things I want to talk about was kind of the show opener, and I don't think anyone else has talked about this because this is kind of my bread and butter. So they opened with Modern Warfare 3, and I talked briefly about this with you, Sean. And one of the things, you know, I thought it was pretty exciting. They show this scenario of a team of elite commandos taking over the submarine on foot and fin, and that's a real good idea. But what I'm really confused about, and this is more Modern Warfare 3 than anything Microsoft, is kind of the series aspiration towards what I'd call verisimilitude. And by that I mean that Modern Warfare tries to be this really tries to deliver this really realistic setting. You know, they have these detailed gun models. They have all the lingo that real operatives would use. But then they forget about things like concussion blasts. And so, you know, in one sequence, like you're 30 feet away from an explosive charge placed on a sub, or, you know, you're 5 feet away from a charge that's powerful enough to breach a door. So there's going to be a shockwave there. And, you know, even if you fire a gun underwater, there's enough of a shockwave there to rupture your eardrum. And I know this seems like nitpicky, but it's just weird that they would focus on this amount of realism here.
But it's arcade realism, right? It's the idea that they're making a war movie. They're not trying to make something that's realistic. They're trying to make something that's believable
fun. But if I'm seeing that in a 5-minute demo, I'm wondering, this is what's going on through Desert Eagle's mind, is what other liberties are in the full game? And I wonder, you know, at the end, they always, in the credits, they have these military advisors, and what are these guys saying or doing?
Hasn't it always been this way with Call of Duty, though?
No. I think if you go back to maybe even the second one, it had some,
or at least Modern
quirks.
Warfare.
Right, it had some quirks, and it had those little, you know, points that you would pass where the enemies would kind of spawn out. But it really seemed to devote itself to creating a realistic historical setting so much. And I just think it's kind of weird in what they decide, like, this is going to be super hyper-realistic, and other things are going to be so stupid that if you saw them in a movie, you'd say, what the hell? Like, that's unbelievable. And I know that that's me being nitpicky about that, and especially, you know, coming out this week after playing Operation Flashpoint, but to me, that's just, I don't know, that really strikes me as weird about Modern Warfare 3. I know it's an arcade experience and people don't care about that, but when I see that, it just throws me out of the...
You gotta remember that they're Michael Bay movies, right? They're
right, which I like. I love The Rock.
Exactly. They research stuff in order to make it look convincing, but they're still gonna blow something up and then walk through it, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's my pet peeve. My other pet peeve, I guess, was voice control in games.
No. My pet peeve was not voice control. It was voice control in games and then trying to pass that off as a Kinect feature.
Yeah, exactly. And a binary domain, which we saw later, is doing it. And that totally reminded me, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, it made me think, why do I need a $150 peripheral to do this shit? I mean, it's like when Activision, they showed that Tony Hawk, that stupid fucking skateboard thing. And then 30 minutes later, Microsoft showed Kinect doing the same thing without the peripheral. And everyone was like, why the hell do I need, you know, this $150 piece of plastic to do that? Yeah. It was like they shot themselves in their own foot.
I will say that even though they still haven't done that thing that they showed in that video where you scan a skateboard in and use it.
That's what was her name? The girl.
Velocity Girl.
That's that shit that will never happen. It's a great idea. It's fine on paper, but it's never gonna, you know, it's never gonna come to end users.
Well, they did do the fashion scanning this year. Was that at the press conference that I saw that?
Did I? I must have missed that.
Fashion scanning where you make your Mii with your Kinect, and then it'll scan your clothes and try and replicate it as best it can. I think
your
that was
Mii your
avatar. Use your Kinect with your Wii, and then I'll help with
it. And you hold up the Wii U while doing it. So
you broke my brain there.
Yeah, me too. So anyway, let's move on because we said we're going to go through things quick. Sony, they hit all the points I wanted them to hit. I mean, they filled journalist bellies with kind of the best layout or bribe around. They had 20 food trucks, open bars, live
band. Hit all the points that I wanted them to hit. Food.
Yeah, some food. Damn good sushi. So anyway, we filed into the sports arena, and they made their apologies, which filled my stomach even more as I won my bet with Sean Nola, who took us to Tommy Pastrami. So thank
only
you,
the
Sean.
Best.
So, but more importantly, I think in this cynical field, I really felt that Sony's apology kind of seemed sincere. I mean, coming from, you know, a corporate figure. And at the very least, it was kind of delivered with a hint of emotion there, the robots from Redmond. Yeah,
I think what really struck me about it is they brought it up in the beginning to apologize, but then they brought it up to tell you that they learned from it. And, you know, it wasn't we learned that if you buy the security suite, you'll be more secure. It was like, hey, we learned how important the online experience is. So aside from just trying to make it more secure, here's what we're doing to make it better, because we realized without it, you know. everything falls apart, and if it's that important, we need to make it a more central focus. It wasn't a sort of, like it has been in past years, where it's like, we're going to try and catch up to Microsoft because their online service is so great. It's more of a, yo, dude, we realize now that shit's super important. And
I think what people forget is that this was devastating for them. So, right. Like, you know, it's not like they were just like, whatever, dude, we don't care. You know, this sucks for them, too, much more than for the end user.
And for the third-party developers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, or publishers, you know, for all those guys that were missing out on a revenue stream or multiple revenue streams for a month. So that kind of hurt. And you know, I really hope that the guys in the industry, all around the industry, like Bethesda, you know, got broken into last night.
Escapist is still having problems. Codemasters got broken into.
No, not Codemasters,
yeah,
really.
Codemasters.
Mm-hmm.
I'll touch on them in a little bit. Anyway, let's talk about
EVE
Vita.
EVE Online, I think, also.
Who?
EVE Online.
Yep, that's true, too. Yeah, they got taken down.
Which, that's poking a sleeping giant right there.
Yep.
That's me.
So let's talk about Vita a little bit, which I thought was a very good piece of tech, and especially, I think, for the $250 price.
Yeah, no kidding.
I do wish Sony indicated what the $299 model will specifically do, whether it'll be multiplayer or some kind of form of like PlayStation Plus for 3G customers.
Well,
I think
it's going to be just for it's everything but gaming. So you're browsing, pulling down trophy information, stuff like that. There, right. I don't think
if it wasn't for AT&T, then we could get Skype and actually make calls, which is what everyone wants to do. But I don't know. I thought that they need to find a better way to sell that $50 plus however much a month it's going to be. I don't know. What's the current price of a 3G monthly plan these days?
I think, well, on T-Mobile, the cheapest one, I think, is $29.99.
Okay. So you better deliver for, let's say they even bring it down to $25, $20.
I don't think the 3G model is going to be worth it. I think the reason that exists is sort of the iPad thing where... Mm-hmm. People buy iPads at AT&T not because they want to make use of the 3G functionality. It's because the Apple Store is sold out.
But is 60% of the iPads 3G models, though?
Yeah.
So they deliberately sold out, is what you're saying.
I don't know about deliberately, but that's been kind of the... Like, if you go into an AT&T store and stop someone who's buying an iPad, it's because they sold out at the Apple Store. I've never talked to anybody with a 3G one that was like, oh, yeah, I really wanted the, you know, it's totally worth it. I wanted the 3G. It's like, man, I went into the Apple Store. There's a huge long line, and then they were selling out. So I was like, fuck it, I need this today. And then there was an AT&T store right across. Or, man, the AT&T, it's $50 cheaper. And, yeah, I'm paying more in the long run, but, man, I just want to save $50 right there.
Hmm.
Like, that's what it's going to be.
And one of the things I want to talk about, Sean, you got some hands-on time with the Vita.
I actually got a lot because at the end of the last day, I went and I actually got to play the Wii U, and then I went back upstairs and played more Vita because that was my favorite thing of the show. But yeah, the Vita I actually really really like it. I said it over and over again during the show. The thing I liked about the Vita was it felt designed a lot more than most consoles do, and I mean like they took ergonomics into account. Like you pick it up and you can immediately reach everything on it. The thumbsticks fit perfectly under your thumb knuckle. You can still reach the buttons without really moving off of the thumbstick much. The screen, which is huge, is positioned so that you can reach across and touch your thumbs in the middle, even though it's a really big unit. So there's no
when you're playing Uncharted and sweeping the landscape.
Yeah, I tried that.
Did you?
Yeah.
On what? You played on the Uncharted?
Yeah, like I said, when I played. Okay, so while I was there, I played Hot Shots Golf.
Yeah.
What's that fighting game that just came out?
Blaze Blue.
Blaze Blue, yeah, because they were showing that you could play old PSP games. I played Virtua Tennis.
That's right. Little Deviants was around the corner.
And I didn't get to play Little Deviants. That's the one everybody said I should. That one and Sound Shapes are the ones I didn't get to play that everybody said I should have. And
Sound Shapes seems like it could be on any platform, though.
Well, I mean, but it's got the back touch thing.
Does
rear
it?
Touch.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's the whole thing, is that you're watching stuff happen as you use the back screen, so using the front screen wouldn't make any sense. That was basically one of those.
Tell me about, because in the show, I just kind of got, pulled out of the show when they were playing Uncharted by kind of touching where they wanted Drake to go.
You don't have to do it. It plays exactly like Uncharted 2, mm-hmm. but it's one of those things that there are certain points where they put in optional stuff, or basically everything that the Vita can do that's extra, there's some sort of gimmicky place in it where if you want to, you can use that, but if not, it controls exactly the same.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So the painting is the one that I got to do, which is you'll see a series of ledges. You can either just use the analog sticks to navigate them like you normally do, or you can paint a line that goes over all of them, and then he'll do it automatically, which isn't fun, but it shows
no.
you do it. It's the same thing with Virtua Tennis uses this kind of the same mechanic. What it mm-hmm. is you can either just hit using the analog stick and the button like you would in the PS3 version,
mm-hmm.
or if you think you've got a big enough opening, you can actually paint a course for it. And if you do it with the right timing, they'll hit the ball. You know, you'll basically know ahead of time where it's going to end up, so that if you know that person's going to be on the other side of the court, you hit the ball on this side by painting a line there. And he's mm-hmm. gonna be more. He'll be less likely to return the volley. That's me trying to talk about tennis, and I have no idea how to play tennis.
Sounds like you did okay.
Yeah.
So let's touch on Nintendo. I know personally for the past 6 years, I think that's how many years I've been going to E3. Mm-hmm. I usually walk away kind of excited from Nintendo's E3 presentation, and I don't know if just kind of crankiness set in, but this year I left kind of confused, bewildered, worried about Nintendo.
I agree with that. Like, when I first read the announcement, by the way, everyone, I, unlike these the other three tech gamers, was not at E3, but I did, like, you know, basically consume all the news that I could stand. And when I read the announcement of the Wii U, I was just like, okay, that seems like they're just putting something out there and they don't really know what to do with it. But then the more I thought about it and the more I heard about, like, what some of the tech demos were doing, I was like, you know, actually, I'm kind of starting to get excited about this because it's like you have...
Don't fall in that trap.
What you said, Adam, I think was really important, because I thought that they hedged so much. They did so much verbal hedging through the show. They were so vague. They said, this is coming at the end of the year. We have a commitment to work on Smash Brothers.
They still don't know what they're doing with it.
So I felt that E3 was like this market research. Like, they have this captive audience. And that's kind of, you know, read what the press says about that. And then we'll kind of go back.
I think that's why we haven't seen the Wii sensor. Or what is it called, the vitality sensor? Yeah, like, we never saw that because it was laughed at so much that they're like, oh, we're still working on that, and then years later, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too many dick jokes on Twitter after that.
I actually got to play it on the last day. Unfortunately, the only thing I got to actually play hands-on was that stupid shield game, mm-hmm. which is the rhythm game where... they shoot arrows at you and tell you which direction they're coming from, and then you have to block them mm-hmm. and beat with the imaginary music. Or maybe there is music that I just couldn't hear on the show floor. And it's cool. One of the things that I hear a lot of other people talking about that I unfortunately didn't try was, if you turn around, I guess there's an island behind you. Mm-hmm. You can see the whole island, and that's cool. It's like wearing VR glasses without actually getting to wear the VR glasses.
Really? That's cool, Sean?
I mean, it's cooler than...
I think you're stretching. You're trying to make it cool.
My complaint, and I know Deagle isn't really tired of hearing about it, it's the stupidest design for a peripheral.
I totally agree.
They put the analog sticks over the buttons and D-pad, so you can't use them at the same time. So you'll never have a game that uses both sticks and the buttons, because... Your fingers don't bend that way. Where your hands naturally rest on that controller, you can't pull your thumbs down that far unless you slide your hands down to use the buttons and D-pad on their own.
I think what I'm most excited to see is where, like, games that would use it as, like, a viewport that you have in front of your TV. So you can see things almost like an augmented reality placed upon your TV.
Okay.
So you're saying use the camera to...
Yeah, you have stuff kind of in the foreground through the little tablet thing.
Well, and then forgive me if I'm wrong, I think there's only a front-facing camera. I don't think there's a back-facing camera.
Hmm.
I mean, I guess maybe with the Wii Sensor Bar or something.
Yeah, with the gyro, they can probably figure out what direction, maybe.
But you wouldn't be able to overlay things onto the screen. My other thing that I brought up is that the PS3 and I think the Xbox too, but I know for a fact the PS3 already has this sort of built into it. It can already use Bluetooth to talk to my smartphone because that's how I watch Blu-rays. Is I have a Blu-ray remote on my smartphone that works with my PS3. So, like, the whole added screen thing is something that's already possible on existing consoles. It's just a matter of, especially with the PlayStation certified phones, they could just say, hey, yeah, you know what, we're going to make some games that do the same thing that this Wii U is doing. We'll put it out before the Wii U comes out, and any Android or iPhone can be your second screen. Like, it doesn't seem that innovative when you think about the fact that it can already be done by something you already own.
Right. And now, is the bandwidth on Bluetooth capable of transmitting that much of a signal?
Well, I don't think it needs... I think the playing something on your screen, the streaming thing, I don't know if it could do that. But having like a tactical map or something,
I think that
it's very possible of doing.
Sure. Okay. I mean, a lot of the talk about that was that by the time that the Wii U hits market, someone else will already, you know, be there and be doing those things.
Yeah.
Apple. You know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. One of the questions. Oh, Adam, any last thoughts on Nintendo?
Well, what about the 3DS games? What about Super Mario 3DS?
It's
cool. Cool. I mean, I'll play it. It looks fun. It's not gonna. I
heard a lot of
people
being cold on it.
I mean, it
looks fun. It's not gonna be a system seller, I don't think.
Yeah, which is weird for a Mario game. I think that's why people are so cold on it. It's not that it looks bad. It's that you kind of expected to get more excited about it.
I think
it looked a lot like Galaxy to me.
Well, it seems like they've pretty much said, right, that they're like combining 2D with 3D Mario games, and I think that's a really cool idea, and that it'll probably be pretty fun. But it's not, you know, I don't think it's gonna rock anyone's world like the first time they saw Super Mario 64 or Galaxy or something like that.
Right. Well, I think that's exactly it. Is that it doesn't seem like most of the time a Mario game on a new system, with the exception of Mario 64 times 4, it's usually, hey, look how innovative this new type of Mario game is. You know, like Mario Galaxy was completely different than Mario Sunshine, which was completely different from Mario 64. Well, I guess not completely different from Mario 64, but it seemed weird. They were like, hey, this is a game that is kind of like Super Mario 3, but kind of like Super Mario 64. That's cool, right? And then Sega
and
came
I mean,
out.
I'm down
same...
with that. It's just,
I am
it's
too,
not...
but it just, it's not earth-shattering
revolutionary
like a Mario game.
Or,
yeah.
Or seemingly so.
It's like they always say that Nintendo designs systems around one Mario game, and if that's the one Mario game they designed the 3DS around, I don't think it justifies the 3DS. You know?
I for this one, I think that the 3DS is an outlier. I think they said, let's put 3D on our DS system and
we'll
call it
the 3DS.
Right, and didn't have any larger aspirations than that.
I think that's the problem with the Wii U and the Vita too. They're let's take things we already have and mash this stuff that the public seems to want in other spaces into it. You know, like, oh, we can put touchscreens on it. How are we gonna use these touchscreens? Fuck, I don't know. What's our marquee game? Just make a game that uses it.
Yeah,
you know.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, definitely. I do get the sense that the Vita is everything they could possibly put in there crammed in there.
Yeah.
You know, the ultimate Swiss Army knife portable, except a phone, of course. So we had a question from Kay. She asked what games we saw that we were really hyped up on that we had seen at E3.
A lot of sequels, right?
Yeah. So, Sean, you want to kick things off? Anything you're
The week before that this would be the last year that I would say Space Marine. So Space Marine and also Kill Teams, because Kill Teams was... Basically, they...
What is that?
So Kill Teams is going to be the, you know, Xbox Live Arcade PSN game that comes out. I think it actually comes out next month to kind of serve as marketing for Space Marine. And it's just it's just a multiplayer twin stick shooter where it's it's class based.
One of those,
so,
huh?
Yeah, it's class based, so you pick either the librarian, the tech marine, the stern guard vet, which is, you know, your heavy weapon specialist, or your
fry cook.
No, or your vanguard vet, who's your close combat specialist. So you pick one of those four, and you can level up, I think. And there, it's twin stick shooter. It's Hunter the Reckoning in space, which in high school there's probably a notebook page somewhere that says Space Marine plus Hunter the Reckoning equals success, and I'm pretty sure they just found that.
And that was yours.
And that was mine. I had that idea.
And I had unicorns on the cover.
Space unicorns.
I was pretty fired up, if anything, and this probably won't shock you guys too much. What Atlas was putting out, I thought, you know, Catherine looked phenomenal, looked really interesting.
Catherine was weird for me because I didn't realize how few people had played the Japanese demo. So, like, for me, that was, like, nothing we saw was new except for the fact that it was in English.
Right. I've been deliberately kind of avoiding news and stuff because I really want to experience that.
I'll finally watch the quick look of Catherine, and I was like, okay, yeah, this looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's as I said, it's a tied year.
And then
game.
I was like, I'll pre-order it, and maybe they'll have some cool limited edition stuff. And then I saw the limited edition, and I was like, oh no, I'm getting the regular edition.
No pillowcase?
Pillowcase with her on it, and it's just like this cheesecake stuff, and I don't know.
Rock of Ages, I thought was a really cool combination of you know, Katamari, art history, just weird Monty Python-esque stuff.
I was bummed when we went to see Atlas because they had on their walls everything they were bringing out this year, and we saw two games.
Five Shin Megami Tensei games?
Yeah.
I'm perfectly okay with that, you know me. That was like one of the few, besides Final Fantasy 13 too, that was one of the few JRPGs that I saw.
Yeah. So. I listened to a really good interview about how nobody's mentioned Final Fantasy 13 too on any websites.
Because it just looked like 13, but by...
Well, I mean, but this is the first year that there has been a Final Fantasy game at the show where it wasn't a big deal. Like, even at Square Enix's booth, you had to go behind other games to play it. Like,
the Final Fantasy faithful was just like the guys who were logged in there were not leaving. Like,
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying it's.
Right.
I mean, there was an interview with whoever's the president of Square was, who was talking about how if they didn't buy Eidos, he doesn't think that they'd be in business right now because there was such a poor showing from the Japanese side of the company.
Really.
And that was a big part of it. He's like, I can't believe Final Fantasy's not a big deal anymore.
Interesting. Where was that article?
I'll find it and send it to you.
Okay. I thought for the listeners.
Maybe it'll end up in the show notes.
Awesome. You guys want to talk a little bit about what we've all been playing?
I have been playing Shining Force 2, and that's about it, because I've been working my ass off trying to put out fires that started during E3.
Were you playing on PSP?
No, I'm playing it on my tablet. I mean, on my Sega Genesis is what I've been playing it on.
Wink, wink. Adam?
I've been playing a lot of stuff. I need to kind of remember what I've already mentioned. Have I talked about the Captain Jameson Alpha yet?
I don't think so. Sounds new to me.
I mean, so yeah, I wrote that article for Tech Gaming. If people haven't seen it, I basically wrote an article about what the Captain Forever series is exactly. Because I feel like there's been some confusion on that, especially since the site's kind of written in character. And so when you go there and you don't know what it is, you can just basically look at it and go, what is this? Like some kind of weird ancient Telnet site or something? Yeah, and so I wrote that article just kind of as a, because I love the series so much and I wanted people to know what it is and understand why they should support it. Awesome. People should check that out. Captain Jameson basically expands on the Captain Forever premise of kind of on the fly ship building, from destroying enemies and taking parts off of them and putting them onto your own ship, and The aesthetic's really cool, and it kind of takes itself seriously in combining like obsolete technology with fantastical. So, like in Captain Jameson, you're using like this kind of Telnet style interface, even though you have this really advanced ship. So it almost feels like a strange fantastical progression from actual NASA technology. Captain Jameson adds exploration elements to what was basically the original Captain Forever.
So is this someone else, another developer, who's pushing this on? Or is this...
No, this is still Farbs. He's been doing all this stuff.
Okay.
Captain Forever's free to play. Once you pay $20, you can play the rest of the games and anything else coming out. Captain Forever, Captain Successor, which is like Forever, but with more parts and different types of enemies and stuff like that. Imposter, which has a whole new mechanic of like cloning ships instead of, breaking them apart and using the parts. And then there's like a spin-off game that's kind of like Galaxian called Phyraxian. And then there's Jameson, which is an open alpha, and it adds, like I said, exploration elements. It's kind of inspired by Elite and roguelikes, and it's got, right now it doesn't have random generation, but it's going to. It already has that mechanic, but right now all the alpha testers are basically playing the same world that he generated randomly, just for the sake of, bug testing and stuff like that. What the cool thing about it is you start off, you're near this nav station, there's an oxygen station, and stuff like that. And, you need to manage keeping your oxygen level up by going back to oxygen stations and also, activating nav stations so you can see more of the map. And so it gets this kind of like really cool risk reward system of trying to sort of explore the outer borders of what you can see on your map right now and still, and stay safe. Don't go too far. Don't try and take on enemies that are too strong. Mm-hmm. And just keep your oxygen, steady. There's lots of stations that you'll have to rescue because most of the stations in the game have been taken over and you have to take them back from like these guardian ships that are kind of powerful. People can read my article. I don't know why I'm talking about it so much here, but
because they're paying you. Just kidding.
No, I'm not being paid. It's pro bono.
Yeah, you said bono.
Bono. I've been like pretty obsessed with Captain Jameson because it took like a game that I like already loved and like added mechanics that I love to it.
How many hours of gameplay would you say if someone spent the $20 to get all that?
With
no PR speak.
Wow, I don't even know. It's really hard to say because it could conceivably be a lot. I've got hours and hours so far out of it. Fire it up to only play it a while, and then hours later I'm still playing it. So and that's especially with Jameson. The other games are a little more like coffee break style.
Okay.
But there's you could definitely sit and play them for hours as well. People should
Infinite Undiscovery.
Check out my what's that?
I said Infinite Undiscovery.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a game.
I know.
We talk about games here sometimes.
People check out my article. Played more Space Chem, which I already talked about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that game does a really good job of just slowly introducing more elements. I went back and actually played an optional mission that like I skipped before because it seemed too hard. And I was like, why did I think this was hard? And I realized that the game had done such a good job of like teaching me new mechanics that I could use and methods to get things done. So it almost is like learning to program in a language. The more you do it, you know, the fancier tricks you start to use. And then since the eShop launched, mm-hmm. I went kind of on a buying spree that I intend to continue in the future. I bought all the Q games from the same people as Pixel Junk. Right. I got Xscape, which is a mm-hmm. Tank game. I got Trajectile. I got Starship Defense. And Art Style Digit Drive is them. And those have some of those have different names in the UK just to confuse you. So Xscape is like basically the most adventurous of the mm-hmm. of the games. It's a lot like Battlezone. It's actually I don't know if I've talked about there's an old Game Boy game that Dylan Cuthbert of Argonaut, who went on to do Star Fox, he did a Game Boy game that was 3D tank game, kind of like Battlezone mixed with some like tunnel flying. And
was he with Argonaut?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Jez Sands and those guys. What was that one? Star something.
Star Glider?
Maybe that was it. I remember
it was Star Glider 1 and 2.
On the Commodore 64, I would kind of sing the song every time you boot it up.
So he did that Game Boy game, and Nintendo basically said, wow, like, look at this guy. So then he went on to do Star Fox. And so Xscape is actually a sequel to that old Game Boy game that we never got. It was only in Japan. And it continues the story. It's very much like Battlezone, mm-hmm. but it's got a really cool aesthetic that's very, very Tron-like.
Does it have the useless pyramids?
Useless pyramids.
The pyramids and then the barriers that you could shoot over. So they were just obstacles.
No. But it sort of has stuff like that. it's got these strange mechanics where, like, sometimes the tank can fly and later on you can activate that at any time. When you're going from planet to planet, you fly through these, like, little tunnel segments where you have to get through in a certain amount of time or you don't make it. And so it almost has, like, overall this very light Metroid kind of structure.
Okay.
Of like going from planet to planet that each has its own like aesthetic, and sometimes there'll be like some really, really super mild puzzles. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, this thing is up on a platform and there's a button right next to it. I wonder how I get it down. And yeah, so it's got kind of a cute, silly story along with it. I don't know, cute isn't the right word. It's sci-fi, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. I mean, if you like games like Star Fox, and mm-hmm. you liked when they did like the kind of weirder stuff, like now you're in the tank and now, you know, you're on foot or whatever, and a Metroid kind of sheen over that, or not a sheen, but some mechanics mm-hmm. added to that, if that sounds interesting to you, then you might want to check this out. I think it's only like $7.
Speaking of tank games, did you ever play Arctic Fox?
Yeah.
The old Electronic Arts. Yeah. Okay. That was a cool one. That was Dynamix.
There were Stellar 7 and Nova 9, I think, were sequels
mm-hmm.
to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a weird game. It's quirky. The controls aren't the best. Like, you can switch between using button controls and stylus controls, and believe it or not, the stylus controls actually work better, I think. And what kind of confuses me is, like, why didn't they have like kind of a hybrid control where you could sort of use both? That would have worked best. But once you get used to the controls, I had some fun with it, and one of the things is the music and the sounds are excellent. They're done they have surround effects, and it's just a really cool sort of atmospheric game. If nothing else, yeah, it kind of sucks you in that sense. And then the other games are much more simple. Trajectile is kind of kind of like a bust-a-move type game where you shoot out these little missiles of different types depending on the stage. And you try to destroy all these, I don't know, blocks, tiles, whatever they are. You can activate little power-ups. And you get a medal if you do it with fewer missiles than it gives you. It's really simple, but it's done well and kind of in a cool retro look. If you like a game like Bust-A-Move, but you want kind of more of a sit down and think out, like, how do I go about, you know, bouncing these missiles around and getting these in the few, hitting all these targets in the few shots possible, then if that sounds cool to you, then this will probably appeal.
No dinosaurs, though, right?
No dinosaurs.
Then why would you play Bust-A-Move without Bub and Bab?
Deal killer right there.
Yeah, no dinosaurs, but I would say that you could get more hours out of this than your average Bust-A-Move, because there's a lot of stages also. Starship Defense, which you can tell it's a tower defense game, kind of with a faux, it almost seems like it's going to be really different from a tower defense game just because you're sort of defending a starship in each level.
Okay.
But ultimately that's moving through space, but ultimately it kind of comes down to, on the top screen, you have like these kind of Galaga-like formations, and they fly down, and you have to take those out. And if you don't destroy all of them, then you don't get like a perfect score. And you can tell it's designed by the same people who did Pixel Junk Monsters, because there's some similar mechanics there, but it's also pretty different in, you're not controlling a little guy directly. You're moving the stylus around, collecting little coins or whatever they are, and I'm not doing a great job of explaining it, but if you enjoyed Pixel Junk Monsters, and you want something similar but also, you know, pretty different in some ways, something that's of similar quality, then yeah, this is a way to go.
Cool.
And then lastly on the Q Games front is Art Style Digidrive. Digidrive was also a Bit Generations game, which the Bit Generation games were only in Japan. Dotstream is a game that came to, I think, WiiWare. That was originally a Bit Generation game.
Those were DS, right? DS games?
No, those are Game Boy Advance games.
Game Boy, yeah, GBA.
There was like Sound Voyager, Dotstream.
Didn't you review one?
I reviewed a WiiWare game that was a sequel. It was Orbit something. The GBI one was Orbit All, but this was like Orbit Tuss or I don't know. Something
that's right.
Like
that. Hey, do you guys remember that drink Orbits?
No, I remember the gum.
Round in it.
Remember the gum?
Yeah.
Oh, it had the little things floating in it?
Yeah.
I remember people talking about it, but
was it like little pieces of boba?
Kinda, yeah.
I remember. Yeah. Was it clear and had little green shit in it?
The color of the balls changed by the flavor.
Say that again. Come again.
The color of the balls changed by how bad they had to get it off.
The balls.
But
okay.
No, sorry. All of the Adam talking reminded me of two things, so I wanted to back up. Thing one, I played this crazy ass game at E3 that was I don't have the guy's card in front of me, so I have no idea what the game was called, but it was a sensory deprivation game.
Oh yeah, yeah. Indie
game. Yeah, I heard this.
So basically I was wearing a gas mask with the eyes taped over so I couldn't see out. And you played the entire game by sound, so it's supposed to be like you're underwater and there's monsters swimming around in it and you've got to shoot the monsters.
That sounds so cool.
In this turret that you're in, the turret can only move 180 degrees. And when you breathe, you can actually hear the respirator. So you don't want to, you want to control your breathing so that you can actually hear the monsters coming.
Oh, wow.
And the guy said I was better than anybody else who'd played. So I lasted 15 minutes until I realized that we only had a half an hour appointment. So I had to. I wanted to see what happened when you died.
So. And that was also the first appointment of the day on opening day.
Yeah.
So. That sounds really cool. I hope he finds still a way to like kind of distribute that.
I just wish that he had figured out a way to make the game. Because from what he said, it just goes on forever.
And that's the problem with sound-only games is they end up being like really simple, ultimately.
Well, the thing is, like, they set up a story. Like, there's this guy who, you know, he keeps calling in, and it's hard to understand him because you can't hear him over your breathing. But it sounded like you're supposed to hold down the fort until they come pick you up with some plot. But they never show up, and it's like, yeah, it just keeps getting harder and harder until eventually you die.
Yeah, I think if someone could make a game like that where it actually has some kind of navigation mechanic where you're exploring an area,
yeah,
in some way,
it could definitely do that. You know?
Was there a narrator, Sean?
That's what I'm saying. There was a narrator in the fact there was a guy who kept calling in, being like, "Hey, dude, you know,
okay,
just keep it up because you're doing stuff." Yeah. But not,
that's cool, yeah. But yeah. I think if it was story-like and almost had a narrator, that would be kind of interesting to kind of lure you in, you know, like 30 seconds to a minute to kind of get you in the mood, you know, to it. That would be kind of cool.
But that was cool. And the other thing I wanted to mention,
thing too,
you said the word monster in there somewhere.
Heartbreak
City. No Monster
City.
Hunter. And we talked to one of the executive producers, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And
associate producers.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right. Because I made the joke that his job was to associate with other producers.
I don't think he liked.
Yeah, but we were trying to talk him up. Be like, yeah, man. You know, we're heading over to the Capcom booth. Any Monster Hunter? No. Oh, yeah, because this here's Sean. He's like the biggest Monster Hunter fan, so he's totally excited for that Monster Hunter third on PS3. And he's like, yeah, don't hold your breath. Games don't sell here. We need to make money. And I was like.
Wow.
He's like point blank just told me, like, don't hold your breath. Monster Hunter is not coming back to America for a long time.
And I'm not sure if it was by, you know, proxy, if I just felt bad for Sean or what, but I was kind of sad to hear that.
I'm not the biggest
Monster Hunter fan, but I'd still like to see it
thrive. I have a feeling that Capcom is, like, basically in the middle of a bidding war between... Sony and Nintendo going like, we want Monster Hunter on our platform. No on ours. You know.
Well, there's always Lord of Arcana, Sean.
Yeah. Well, there was another interview with somebody after E3 that he was like, well, I don't want to give anything away, but there are very early talks on a new Monster Hunter game that, if it sells well, might come to America. And I was like, that's the best you can give us, is that someday a game that might have something to do with Monster Hunter may do well in another country and possibly do well enough for a North American release. That's the best you can give me.
If it sells well in Japan?
I don't know.
That's a given.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Okay.
But it sounds like the remastered version is not going to make it over here, and that bums me out because Portable 3rd looked like a good game.
Import, baby.
Well, but I've tried playing the import version because the demo is actually really, really long, and I can't.
In Japanese, baby.
That's going to have to be it.
Yep. You're going to have to bite the bullet.
Lissai. But, yeah, Deagle, what have you been playing?
Well, let me start things off, preface this by saying I got nothing against most console first-person shooters. Games like, you know, Battlefield, Call of Duty are really – I enjoy the experiences, but they don't scratch for me that simulation itch, which kind of got inflamed by games like the early, like, Rainbow Six titles, both on computer and the first couple of Xbox ones. Now today, there's just too many kind of, I guess, corridor shooters for me where the firefights consist of battles and like less than 50 feet or so, which seem kind of like these shooting galleries peppered with the requisite, I don't know, sniper bit. So when Operation Flashpoint, which I know I've mentioned on the podcast a couple of times, the Dragon Rising came out, it hit me like a 50 cal. You know, it gives you like this open world to explore. You get vehicles. I mean, the whole war porn playground is delivered to you. So needless to say, I was really excited for the sequel, Red River, which takes place on the Chinese border of Tajikistan. So after playing and finishing most of the 10 mission campaign, I want to talk about some of the great additions, some of the changes to kind of appeal to the masses, and some of the problems with the game. So first up, let me hit the best part, and that's the addition of four-player online co-op. The game's AI, it isn't terrible, but it's hardly autonomous. It really requires you to kind of babysit, you know, tell your squad what to do. Clearing buildings, for instance, it takes longer than it should. You know, I'm sure the Marines are checking under bed and closets, but the interiors don't have them. All the interior spaces are really empty, so it should be a real cut and dry thing. But playing with a four-man, like a real-life fire team, makes the game just a whole lot better. Especially, you know, most of the missions are about an hour long, so making it out alive, you know, with everyone alive, it feels really good.
You mean like multiplayer with other actual people or with AI?
Yeah, totally, with other actual people. With the AI, you don't get that same sensation. It was like, okay, you guys didn't fuck up this time, you know, good for you kind of thing. But with other people, because the people, when you're playing with other people, they kind of handle things on their own. You don't have to direct them all the time, which really feels good. So one of the things, speaking of time, the game does some interesting things. One is you drive a hell of a lot less in this one. But on the downside, you kind of hump it around a lot more, and you get transported a whole lot more. When you're on foot, one thing that's really cool is you have the occasional kind of lone insurgent who will fire on your team. And unlike most, you know, kind of first-person shooters, a single, like a lone enemy can really wreak havoc. You know, one time it killed three of our four, you know, team members. So I like this because it really keeps the tension tense. You know, you'd never quite know what you're walking into, and like a single enemy can kill you guys. The last thing that I like is that the game really doesn't give you a tutorial. It's kind of strange because it's in that area between arcadey and hardcore Arma 2 sim. Instead, you get, you know, Staff Sergeant Knox is the main character, and you get these 10 golden rules which are drilled into your head. And at the beginning, they do this strange thing for a game that's kind of heady like this. They put you at the, you know, the firing range, and you learn how to fire. And then you kind of learn to give commands. And beyond that, there's nothing else. So Knox's 10 rules are these essential habits which you need to stay alive. And it's things like, you know, fall back if you're going toe-to-toe with an enemy, keeping a full magazine. And they kind of drill it into your head. So when you're playing, you kind of remember those things without having to go through a tutorial that actually tells you what to do. So that's kind of cool, and it gets repeated enough or it's really drilled into your head. And to bring us back to last week, Sean, the Sergeant's voice is delivered by the same actor who did Apone in Aliens. So that was kind of cool. A lot of people...
Apone?
Yeah, whatever. A lot of people don't like the swearing and cussing, but I thought it was really funny. In fact, I enjoyed it more than Duke Nukem. I just thought it was kind of funny. But yeah, there's enough F-bombs to maybe turn off some people there. Now, as far as changes, the game's been dumbed down a little bit. Before, you had to stop bleeding by applying a tourniquet there. And now, once you do that, you can even heal yourself. So if you get, you know, like shot in the head, you can heal yourself on the lower difficulty levels, you know, take your health back to 100%. So what you do is you just take cover, hold the A button, you know, hold that down for a little while, which kind of makes the game a little bit too easy, you know, even on the kind of medium difficulty. I think the AI, enemy AI isn't as adaptive in the game. I've seen, you know, enemies kind of run down a path, they get shot, and then another enemy runs the same exact path, which is kind of good. The one thing is, even though they talk about it, they don't dig in as much. Because one of my favorite parts about Dragon Rising was, you know, the enemies would just, you know, they'd have high ground, they just dig in, you know, behind somewhere, and that would give you a great excuse to use the blooper. And then if you just hit them and blow them to shit, oh, that was such an awesome feeling there.
it seems really weird that in a game that focuses so heavily on realism, that their AI would just be, you know.
It's total, like, path. You can see that the path, because there's one part you're fighting across this, like, river there, and you see the guys run the same exact pass, and it totally kills it for you. You just feel like, oh, I'm
they
playing.
Need, they need a license like the Fear AI engine or something.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit of that. I mean, but it seemed like their AI in the last game did a lot more different things there.
Oh,
like,
really? Okay.
Like they rush you, they'd hang back, they were unpredictable. In this one, they don't just do as much. And like I said, maybe it's because sometimes there's interiors. To get to some of the other problems, the engine itself is starting to show its age. It's primarily the same engine they used last time. There's some spots where the frame rate really struggles to keep up. This weird thing is when you get within 25 yards of an enemy, which you shouldn't. You know, if you're doing that, you're fucking up. You're doing it wrong. But they play the sound sample of what sounds like an everyday kind of Taji conversation, meaning it's not excited or yelling. It's just like this phrase that they play, and it's louder than your own squad's voices. So even though they're 23, yeah, it's this really strange like sound sample. It's just like, what? You know, are you getting interference or what's going on there?
Is there a lot of like bad sound mixing like that?
No, that's kind of the only thing, but it can happen a lot, you know. Uh-huh. You get within 25 yards of another person, and it's almost you can measure it there because they always call out the target. They'll say like southeast, 50 yards or something, and then if you get too close, but it's just this weird kind of sound sample, or just like they're probably talking about coffee or something, but they're actually aggressive. They're carrying an AK, they're coming at you, they're firing, but they sound so nonchalant.
That's so strange.
I would like some coffee. Kablam, blam, blam. Yeah,
exactly. They're just cold, hard killers. As far as replay, there's four different kind of spec op style missions that are pretty cool. There's things like this horde mode. You escort a convoy, which you can also play up to four people. Just kind of dabbled in those, which are kind of cool because they don't have that same voiceover, which is kind of with the campaign. Because in the campaign, you get carried a lot by Humvee or by chopper. And that's when the sergeant, he tends to ramble on a lot. And when you replay missions, because there are kind of perks and level ups on there based on what class you're playing as, there's an incentive to replay the missions, but to hear the same dialogue over and over is kind of a deal killer. It's like, really? You're going to lecture me on, keeping my magazine full again? So. Mm-hmm. So moving on to a first-person shooter, which didn't win me over, was Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah,
review went up today, D+. Maybe I was kind on that. I don't know. Now, I know Sean really wanted to like the game.
I did.
But it's really just hard to recommend at its current $60 price tag.
I'm Sean, were you a big fan of the original?
Liked it for its time way back when. I love 3D.
And that was, like I said, my pick last week. Like, my entire family liked Duke Nukem, even my mom.
And one of the things that I liked about Duke Nukem, I'm not sure if you did this, Sean, but let's say there was a toilet and you put like a pipe bomb and you blew up the toilet. Well, there would be like this little, water thing that would come up, and you could drink the water, you get some of your health back. Mm-hmm. And those little cool things that fucking with the environment was really cool. Now in Duke Nukem Forever, I mean, you can hit the pool table kind of and bounce the ball around, you watch it, but they're not as playful, they're not as fun, they're not as experimental. Well,
and I don't remember who else was saying this, but one of the podcasts I listened to, they were talking about how when Duke Nukem did all that stuff in, 1999 or whenever the hell it was.
Yeah, 1996.
That was all like revolutionary stuff. No one had done that before. And since then, it's more than expected. It's really baseline. And that's why it was so successful. It wasn't the humor. It wasn't any of that stuff. It was that it did so many things that we had never seen before. You could look up. Like, blew people's minds.
And I remember the pool table, because they were full pool sims. I remember, screwing around with the pool table and say, wow, this actually works. It's like a whole pool game in here. A pool game. But yeah, exactly. Like those little elements. And now today, I mean, you turn the water on, you flush the toilet, you pee. I mean, they left out certain things like, okay, you're peeing on the urinal, but how funny would it be if you could pee on the wall, if you could pee anywhere, right? Why does it have to be all you're doing is pulling a trigger, and that determines how long you're pissing, right?
So, well, then you would get postal, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yes, but
there's nothing they could have done that hasn't already been done.
But they could have made it a lot more fun. Like in the review, I talk about there's this little boy, he comes up, he said, Duke, will you autograph my book? and they give you this really clumsy interface where you're using the analog stick and you could draw like a penis, or you could draw like, you know, you could write the F word. But the reaction is always the same. Little boy says, gee, thanks, mister. And it's like, how funny would it be if you had like a text interface? And if you wrote something nice, you know, you got one reaction, or if you use the F-bomb.
I think the whole funny thing about that is, though, that it is a canned response, and most people are just putting dicks in there. I think that actually works.
On the first whiteboard, you're actually drawing it, and they're saying, like, the same thing over. Like, oh, my God, that's phenomenal. And it's like, I haven't even started drawing yet. And I guess that's funny, but you're laughing at how bad the game is instead of kind of laughing with the game.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. So the jokes, I don't know. They're older than mine, and the elements which kind of, you know, go beyond just being a mere shooter kind of fall flat. And the worst thing I think is there's these lengthy kind of 30-second mid-level load times between levels. So I don't know. I probably said enough and risk being blackballed from further 2K titles. So that's so,
worse than Bonetown.
Oh, hell yeah, it's worse. I never played Bonetown, but from the looks of it, yeah.
Bonetown is my watermark for a slightly below average game.
No, this one is kind of more than slightly below average. Duke is considerably below average.
Speaking of 2K, did you guys see XCOM at the
I did not.
I didn't see it. I heard it was better than last year.
Yeah, from what I've seen of like interviews and buzz and whatnot, it sounds like they're actually, you know, adding in significant strategic elements.
Okay.
Which is making me feel a lot better, and I do like the aesthetic.
But is it a real? I mean, is it strategy or is it kind of pseudo strategy?
Really? I mean, from what I understand, it's strategy in the sense of like kind of Mass Effect. Like combat of telling your dudes to go here and go there. They can level up. You can research weapons or use the enemy alien weapons or use them.
I'm on strategy where if you make a bad call, it almost pushes you towards losing. Right?
Yeah, like yeah. I would like that too, but I don't.
That's not gonna
maybe
happen.
We'll get like a hardcore mode or something.
Okay.
Speaking of games, we saw that Adam was stoked for. We did see Deus Ex a couple of times.
Yeah, I got to play it for four or 5 minutes.
Yeah, that did.
What did you think?
It didn't seem so hot.
Okay.
It seemed like a less polished Alpha Protocol.
I mean, if I get basically the original Deus Ex, but with like a cover system and like slightly newer mechanics, then I think that might be enough for me.
I didn't think it was as bad as Sean is saying.
You also got to remember that I really liked Alpha Protocol, so that's not as much of a ding as I'm making it sound. It just that's what it evoked in me was like, this looks like Alpha Protocol, except it's not doing anything for me.
I really like the aesthetic.
One of the things about Alpha Protocol that bothered me was there wasn't much in the way of environmental stuff going on.
There wasn't
really
in the Deus Ex demo we played either, though. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Is it was a lot of stiffly animated, kind of low-res people talking in very boring environments about stuff that... I mean, I understand the demo was taken from late in the game, but like it all seemed like stuff that it was hard to care about, and I don't know. The shooting wasn't very fun. That game needs a lot of work. I hope they...
You know, now you mention it, it does have a lot in common with Alpha Protocol.
I know, right?
Yeah, now you kind of mention it. Yep. Okay. Well, I hope it's better received, if nothing else. So, last thing I want to talk about today, one kind of might be surprising thing. I got a code in today for Greg Hastings Paintball 2, which for anyone who lacks probably an interest in paintball, it might sound pretty dreadful. I played for about 2 hours, and the game is actually a really good simulation of the sport. So if you're into paintball.
Oh, cool.
So not a good shooter, but a good paintball game.
No, yeah, not a good shooter. Now, I reviewed the last iteration of the game, and this one is definitely improved. It seemed like
what
they actually...
What system is it for?
PS3, and it's a download only title.
Okay.
My question. Paintball is a type of game for people who want to shoot at each other but don't want to actually hurt each other.
Right.
Why would you make a video game out of that?
I don't, because it caters to kind of all audiences. I think it really is geared towards a paintball kind of fan base, because one of the things that they've done is kind of copied. They've tried to get that EA Sports vibe, because the title itself is really a showcase about the sport. They put in things like pictures. They even have names of over 1,000, you know, real life players. They have the actual teams and stuff like that. So you could, I don't know who any of these guys are, but I was kind of recruiting people for the team.
Monster Energy Drink teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of meta, but like when you think about it, football is ultimately like an alternative to war.
Right, and
there's football video games, so
So it's a simulation of a simulation, you know.
Yeah,
very removed. So, but anyway, even things like the load screens kind of show the history of the sport. So it's really kind of well done in that it depicts, you know, an appreciation of paintball. So I mean, it's $20. So anyone who's ever, you know, kind of picked up a marker, you may want to check it out. It actually runs pretty well. Little things like the obstacles will actually hit, you know, move ever so slightly when you hit them. The perspective, you know, you can change, you know, hands and stuff like that. So it actually works, you know, pretty well.
Know, more power to them. I'm just surprised they can find a market for that. Because I'm thinking really into paintball and it's a, like, right. Oh, man, it's raining outside, so I can't play. I'm going to sit down on my PlayStation and play not Modern Warfare.
but yeah, that's true. One of the things is that, I mean, the gameplay itself will never stack up to a first-person shooter. But if you could kind of get your friends to play online, it might be kind of fun because it is different.
If you can convince other people.
So, Sean, let's play tonight. Paintball 2.
PlayStation's still broken.
Oh.
And it will continue to be until you forget that game came out.
What game? Doctor Who?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I have Wizardry waiting for you, you know. And I also got Outland. Is that the title? Outland in today?
I should have one this weekend.
Outland is cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited to play that. I've heard nothing but good things about it. And I do like most of Housemarque's stuff. I think they're a good bunch.
I always forget. What else did they do?
Super Stardust HD. They did a golf game for 360.
Right.
And then they did Dead Nation. Dead Nation, yeah.
Is that the name, Sean? Yeah, it is.
Dead Nation. I was trying to remember what the title was. So.
Did you guys snag your free PS3 and PSP?
Oh, yeah.
So I made the mistake of doing it first day for my PSP stuff. And since my PS3 is broken, I had to do it on PC. And as difficult as it is to fix the shit that happened that first day on a PS3, it is impossible to do on your PC. So I gotta hope that when I get my PS3, I can salvage it. But basically so for people who don't have a PS3 or a PSP, basically the way it works is you see the list of games and you have to quote unquote purchase.
Grab a token.
Yeah, these two tokens. And so you get one token and then you buy a game with it, and then you get another token and you buy another game with it, but you have to download the tokens. And there was so much traffic that first day that it was open that a lot of times the data got corrupted while you were downloading the tokens. Mm-hmm. But what they did was if they showed that you downloaded the tokens, it would still show up in your downloaded history. Games list.
Yeah.
But for some reason that doesn't work in MediaGo. So I got to hope it shows up in that list when I get my PS3. Otherwise, I got to spend time on the phone with...
I had to do that, too. I actually went into the PS3, and not my account history, but some other little place I've never checked out before. Mm-hmm. I went back in there, and then it was pretty effortless. But I did have that same problem for all four games. They showed up as previously downloaded. But, yeah, I got Infamous.
I didn't even select my games. But I want to get, for PSP, I'm going to get Killzone Liberation and...
That's a good one.
What was the other one I was gonna get? I already
own Mod Nation. Pursuit Force.
I don't think I want Mod Nation. I think I'm probably gonna get. Wasn't there a Wipeout game?
No, I think that was for.
No, that's for PS3.
I don't know. Like, I already own Little Big Planet, and I don't play it ever. Maybe Pursuit.
Shame
Force.
On you.
I got Big Planet and Pursuit Force. Pursuit Force is cool. Then for PS3, cool. I got the Wipeout pack and Infamous.
Yeah, that's probably what I'll get too. I might get Dead Nation, but I'll probably get Wipeout.
That's what we got for free.
Word.
Speaking of free, you know how much trivia costs?
Nothing.
$2.
$40 you're getting, you
but it's an iPhone app though.
Yeah, exactly. So you guys ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so Duke has had some memorable catchphrases over the years. Of course, I'm referring to Duke Nukem. Identify the saying which the flat-topped hero never uttered. A, your face, your ass. What's the difference? B, your breath smells worse than a Manhattan sewer line. C, it's time to abort your whole frickin' species. Or D, you're an inspiration for birth control.
I think it's B.
I'm going to say C.
Ah, the correct answer, Mr. Duke Nukem expert Sean Nola, your breath smells worse than a Manhattan sewer line, was never uttered. That was my own Duke line.
Because he's from California. Why would he know what Manhattan smells like?
Because he went to Manhattan for that platformer.
Did he?
Yes, Sean.
Is that Time to Kill?
I don't know. It was the platformer one.
Manhattan Project, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, right.
Manhattan Project, where you jump on the like the blowers and stuff, building to building. Yeah, so he knows. See? So get your jazz hands ready for Child of Eden, a Kinect game, which might just be worth playing. So while you're getting ready, identify the obvious falsehood. A, designer Mizuguchi-san designed a corset peripheral, which offers four controller vibrators. B, the PS3.
Wait, is this for Child of Eden, or because that's what he did for Rez?
Yeah, Child of Eden.
Okay.
B, the PS3 version of the game has been delayed until September. C, gamers who submitted a picture of themselves before last November have a chance to be in the final level of the game. And D, finishing the game's five levels opens a visualizer, which lets players play the game with their own music.
I think it's going to be the last one, but I hope that's actually true.
I think it's B.
You think it's B? Correct answer, Sean. 2 for 2, finishing the last level. Completely fake. Wouldn't that be awesome, though?
That would be awesome, but it's also, if it does well, they want to be able to make a sequel. Selfful. So
you're right. Yeah, but I mean, they could actually... A visualizer's never going to be as good as, you know...
It kind of makes me wonder, with all this user-generated content stuff, though, when Konami's going to wake up and make Step Mania. Like, just put out Step Mania.
No. Good idea. What was that Steam game where you could run down pipes and to your own music? What was that called?
Audio Surf.
Yeah. I wish there were more games like that. It just... You know, coordinated with the music or video.
I don't know. I have a problem with games like that because it seems like a lot of times the music is actually pretty disconnected from the gameplay.
Yeah, but what I was saying about Step Mania is it would be cool if, you know, Dance Dance Revolution hasn't sold really well in a long time. If they just went ahead and said, this is going to be the last one we're going to put out for a while and you can make your own shit and just release Step Mania for $60 on PS3 and Xbox, I think that would be cool.
Sean, you said that when our sponsor is DDR Game.
DDR Game would love it because they would sell more dance pads.
Good save. Yeah. Okay. So tactical RPGs are becoming a rare commodity, except for Sean Nola, who's playing Shining Force 2. So it's nice to see Record of Agarus War 0 on this week's released list. What is not one of the game's global publishers? Is it A, Access, B, Namco Bandai, C, Ghostlight, or D, Compile Heart? Who's not publishing it somewhere in the world?
I'm going to say Namco Bandai.
Is Ghostlight even a real publisher? Because that just makes me think of cars.
Ghostlight? Ghostlight's a real publisher. I'll give you that hint.
Yeah, I'm going to say Namco.
3 for 3, Sean. Wow, he's on fire. Yeah.
Namco's not wasting their time with that. They got too much to do with Power Rangers and Ben 10.
Ben 10 is D3.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, I was just in their booth.
They did send me a 3DS game that uses two styluses.
How messed up is it that the 3DS
two styluses has... at the same time?
How messed up is it that the 3DS has two styluses as multi-touch, but the Wii U doesn't?
It does have multi-touch?
So the 3DS obviously does if it needs two styluses. But
I was thinking about that. I thought it uses the same kind of DS screen. But I don't know.
I don't think the 3DS does have multi-touch.
No, I remember somebody else saying something about like when it first came out, double stylus games.
It must then. Okay.
I think, to be perfectly honest, I think it has double touch, which isn't technically multi-touch, but
it's more than one.
Yeah, but multi-touch implies three or more. I have to know this because we have to make that distinction at shows sometimes.
So what is the technical name that the Vita uses for rear touch?
It technically uses rear touch.
I get such a kick out of that name. So this week's now-gen release of Transformers Dark of the Moon comes courtesy of High Moon Studios. Which of the following games isn't on the studio's resume? A, The Ant Bully. B, Dark Watch. C, The Bourne Conspiracy. Or D, Bloodstone.
I want to say Ant Bully because it seems so different from all those other titles. So I'm going to stick with Ant Bully. I think it's wrong, but I think that's the one that stuck out the most to me.
I have no idea. I'm going to pick Dark Watch.
Correct answer. Sean's on a roll. Ant Bully.
Man, I'm just getting murdered.
Yeah.
All those other games just seemed so gray.
Bourne Conspiracy. Yeah. Bloodstone was colorful, I thought.
I never played it. It sounded gray.
Deca Sports Extreme brings 10 common and unusual sports onto 3DS screens. Which isn't one of the game's activities? A, sumo wrestling. B, blowguns. C, alligator wrestling. Or D, trampoline.
I'm going to say blowguns.
Which one of these is not?
Correct.
I'm going to say alligator.
Adam coming through and breaking.
That's cruelty to animals.
Not for wrestling. That's for sport. And alligators, they're mean sons of bitches.
But alligator wrestling is illegal in the United States for just that reason. But then again, so are blowguns. So I had a 50-50 chance there.
Alligator wrestling is illegal?
Yeah.
What would explain Bayou Billy?
He's a renegade.
He's a renegade. I don't think it was illegal back then. And I think it might still be legal in Louisiana and Mississippi, but I could be wrong.
I heard sodomy is, too.
The case is still out.
Awesome. Okay, so good job, you guys. Sean, 4 out of 5. Adam, wrapping it up.
I think I got two.
Two out of 5?
Yeah, I got almost murdered.
Passed. Yeah, it's a tough one.
And Sage asked what you said. Every single question. Ayo, Sage Burn.
Oh.
What was Hey again? We got that.
She's going to be mad at us.
Yeah, that's fine. So we got questions, which I have to bring up.
I actually have them right here. I will ask them. Yes. Question one is for Sage, so we'll skip it. But I promise, Jessica, we will ask your question next week when she's actually here. So question B, Godless Gladiator asks, I'm a long time reader/listener/lurker, and I have to comment on E3 before your next podcast, which is this podcast. So here it goes. Were any of you disappointed in the showing from the big three this year? As me, first, so many games seemed mime. And he sent an article about Robert Bowling miming Modern Warfare 3. Also, there's so much CGI this year in the Wii U, Halo 4, and Starhawk unveilings. It's like companies weren't ready for E3. As far as miming goes, I kind of don't care. I understand why they have that guy standing down there pretending to play the games, because that it makes people believe it's gameplay footage. And I never really question as to whether or not that's gameplay footage, because I don't really feel like they have a lot to gain. I mean, they have enough time that they can sit there and record a bunch of playthroughs and put the best one up there, and I think that's fine. I don't really care if the guy on stage is actually pushing the buttons right or anything. It doesn't really bother me. And as far as CG trailers,
I think they do that fairly, that's a fairly common practice. I remember I talked to, who's the Insomniac lead guy?
I don't remember his name.
The president, Ted Price? Is that
Tony Danza.
Tony Danza, yeah, from Taxi. No, he was talking about, I guess he was up there and he got a little bit nervous and he got so close to dying in Resistance 2. And he almost, you know, wished that they had a canned one ready to go, that he didn't have to perform under pressure.
Well, that, so. And I think somebody up there miming with the controller is better than when Miyamoto got up there with Skyward Sword last year couldn't
it did
play.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah, dear.
Right, and didn't they blame there was too much Bluetooth
turn
activity?
Off your cell phones or whatever.
yeah, too much infrared in the stratosphere there.
So much drama in the LBC. But the other thing, as far as CGI trailers and whether or not, for an
Snoop
unveiling
Dogg
that makes
reference.
Sense.
What's up?
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, as far as CGI trailers go, and whether or not people were ready, the CGI trailers were mostly for things not coming out till 2012 anyway. But as far as people not being ready, there actually were a couple of companies that did say straight up, like, we are not ready for E3 this year because of the earthquakes. Konami said that. Konami came out and, like, at their pre-E3 press conference said, hey, listen, we promise something's coming from Castlevania for the anniversary. We can't show anything because the earthquake fucked us up. We promise there's a lot of Metal Gear stuff. We're not going to have a lot on the show floor about that. Again,
yeah, that sucked.
Earthquake. As far as that really affected a lot of the Japanese publishers. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, sure. Literally people were not ready for it this year. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I also think people are starting to kind of slow down on what they're doing at E3 because as they let more and more people in, they want to show less and less because they don't want that that information to be put out in a way that's going to damage their properties.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, what did you think about, it seemed kind of to die down rather quickly, the news about the Wii U footage was using 360 and PS3 footage?
I thought it was a non-story, to be perfectly honest. I mean,
yeah. What else are they going to do?
Yeah, I mean, they're not being developed on the Wii U as a Wii platform. Because
they could be like Super Smash Brothers and not show a damn thing.
They had to show something. They had to.
Show anything for that.
For the third-party thing, because a lot of times, I think last year with the 3DS, they came under fire because they said, and all these third parties are helping us out with 3DS, and a lot of them were like, this is the first we've heard about it.
Sure. Yeah,
but they had to show something for that segment, and I don't think there was anything wrong showing the 360 and PS3 builds because the dev kits for Wii U can't possibly be finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they would be running it on tools that are still a little bit broken or still in alpha, and that wouldn't have shown very well. I don't think there's any problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that, but as soon as they show CGI, I'm kind of immediately turned off by it because CGI could be anything. And one of the demos they showed was that Kyoto, and it goes by a number of different names, the little bird flying around, and that wasn't gameplay. That was just, you know, a demo of them pushing polygons.
Yeah, that was
nice. And it was just, I don't know, lame. It didn't excite me or anything. You know, it was attractive to look at. But as far as showing perhaps the capacity for the Wii U, didn't tell me anything.
I don't expect them to know necessarily yet what is going to happen with this system. But, hardware-wise and concept-wise, it does seem interesting, and like they could do some cool stuff with it. My biggest complaint with this show this year is that it was mostly sequels, and some of them look really cool, but like I just wanted to see more IPs.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of sequels, no Mirror's Edge 2, not cool, guys, not cool.
DICE is busy doing other things.
Yeah, well, they should get on it.
DICE is busy doing everything, from what I
understand.
They're
doing Need for Speed the Run, right?
Yeah.
Who wants that game?
Oh, don't you think it's a great idea to be walking around in the Need for Speed world?
No, I don't.
Need for Speed universe, that's where I've always been, because I've always wanted to be, because it's exactly like this one.
Right. You know, the one thing I was going to say, what was that game? Was it Dirt? Dust? Dust.
Dust.
Something
Dust
like
514 or whatever.
Yeah, Dust 123. Now, was that CG or was that...
They played the game on stage.
They did? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because at the beginning, it seemed like it was...
Well,
CG.
No, they did show a CG trailer, and then went into the game.
What about...
I think I fell asleep because they said it was going to be, you know, like, Eve, it was going to be this MMO, and then it just looked like Mag or Killzone. Or
yeah,
anything else.
And that like, theoretically is such a cool idea that it's like, all right, I'm playing EVE Online and I'm starting a war over here, and that says, all right, when people are playing Dust, they're going to go do this stuff that's going to help decide how that war goes.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know how into this idea people are going to be that when they log on to play a first-person shooter, that they don't get to choose what kind of game they're going to play. It's just going to throw them into a battle and be like,
I'm going to be a dice roll.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, now you're playing Capture the Flag because that's the kind of mission that some overlord on his computer decided that this campaign needed.
I'm being a grunt for someone else's master plan.
Yeah,
I'd probably be fine with that.
I don't think a lot of people are. I mean, I think I would too. For me, to be perfectly honest, when I play a shooter, I get kind of frustrated with the idea of having to choose all that stuff. I kind of just want to jump in. But I think that overall, the big shooter fans want that sort of control.
Yeah, okay. Probably right. Adam, you were going to say something? Maybe about 1, 2, 3?
Oh, what about From Dust?
Wait, is there two games with Dust in the title?
Yeah, there is. From Dust is the kind of god game with the tribal people and manipulating the land.
Oh, the one you're not really interacting with them. You're interacting with the land, and that changes how they interact with.
I think so. I don't remember who's involved with it, but it seems kind of like a more serious take on like Black and White.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it. I don't remember if I saw anything about it though.
Is that a sequel to that little game, to that one PS1 game where you'd have little people and you try to build a stairway to the sun? Oh, no, what was that one? They were like cavemen and you'd build a path to the sun, like a staircase. You guys remember that?
I don't know.
It's this weird, I don't know, this really weird obscure game.
That caveman games for the Nintendo?
No, not caveman games.
Stairway to the
not sun. BC either.
or BC Razors or whatever it was for the Jaguar.
No. Quest for Tires.
No. Yeah, no, none of those. We're completely off track.
And
now,
caveman games are always bad.
You could pull your woman by her hair and swing around and
yeah.
That was kind of fun.
That was caveman games, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I do remember that game. The wife toss, I think it was called.
Yeah, misogyny right there.
All right. On that note, I think we should probably call it a day.
Mm-hmm. So, or a night.
Or we should call it a I don't have any word to go for that. Sorry.
A Greenwich Mean Time.
The joke. If you want to read our articles about video games,
alligator wrestling,
game videos and stuff, and alligator wrestling, you can read them at www.tech-gaming.com. Please, dear God, comment on this and tell us what you want from us from E3 last year, because I know we kind of let you guys down. But to be perfectly honest, we're not a news site. I kind of think down the line we'd like to be.
No.
Okay, maybe we wouldn't, but we.
There's plenty of other sites that do that very well.
But that was something that we struggled with, is that you guys knew we were at E3, and you guys expected something from us. And for us, it's for networking, but we realize we have a responsibility to you guys, and we kind of want to know what you guys want.
Yeah.
That would be super helpful for us. So, yeah, it definitely. I know a lot of you guys put some feedback in one of the articles. I saw that today. Saying you were kind of disappointed, and I would love to know what kind of stuff you'd want from us that you're not seeing other places. Also, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave us comments there, because I like reading those. Follow us on Twitter. That is Deagle. He is at tech_gaming. I am Sean Nola. I'm at Sean Nola with two N's. That over there is Adam Tidegear Malecki. He is at Tide Gear, and not with us today is Sage, who is at Samurage. Also follow Tide Gear on at Rock and Android.
Mm-hmm.
OG.
And comment on my Captain Forever article. I want to know if people are what they think of those games.
Word. I played those the other day.
And a moment of silence for Monster Hunter was right there.
Oh. Yeah, that was the Monster Hunter silence.
Yes, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sorry. In Memorial, Monster Hunter. What year was it?
It's 2011.
No, no, no. What year did it start? So we can make like a little gravestone.
Shit. Like,
I'm thinking that would be the cover art. Monster Hunter. Rest in peace.
All right. So we got that. We got the theme song. Cap. Wee.
Like a cap cow. Buck in the latest trap. I got stopped by a lady cop. She got me thinking I could date a cop. 'Cause her uniform pants were so tight. She ran me by the right. She put me in a car.